I'm the doctor, by the way.
You're listening to Pieces of Eight, the Doctor Who podcast that sends one of its co-hosts on 100-mile-long drives just to bring you all new content. As ever, we're here to look to explore those sections of the Doctor Who universe that feature the incarnation of the Time Lord as played by Paul McGann. I'm Rebecca Chapman, and thankfully I wasn't the one who did the 100-mile drive.
I'm Kenny Smith, and I did do the 100-mile drive, and it was very good, but you'll hear more of that later. But yes, you join us as we resume our quest to feature the Eighth Doctor's exploits further on screen in books, novellas, fullcast audio, short stories, comics, animations, talking books, magazines, and spin-off films. And that's exactly what we're talking about today again, as we take another look at the fantastic Doctor Who Am I, which we previously talked about.
We did. So far, I haven't had a chance to see it yet. Very much looking forward to the Blu-ray of that coming out. But we've already previewed it a few episodes back now, and it does sound fantastic as we get to hear how TV movie writer Matthew Jacobs gets to grip with a fandom he thought hated him.
But we didn't really. It's great, it really is. And Vanessa Newell, who's part Scottish on her father's side, has done a brilliant job, but we'll come to that shortly.
I'm convinced that we need to change the name of this podcast. Pieces of Scotland.
Okay.
So, tell me about the journey, how it came about, and your wrong turn on the motorway?
Yes. As you'll hear shortly, I was accompanied by my old pal Dave Steele, my old Power of Three co-host, that Doctor Who podcast that is still technically alive. It's not dead, but it's just resting at the moment on hiatus. And yes, picked Dave up at Kirkhill train station, which had actually been Midge Ewer, the singer's local train station when he was younger, and picked Dave up there. And we travelled through on the M74, then we went on to the M73 to turn on to the M8, and which numpty took a wrong turn onto the M8, and we were delayed by about 20 minutes to try and get through round and back and get back onto the M8, and I thought, bums, we are going to miss the start of it. But no, we made it in plenty of time. And it was lovely, just a really good chat and nattering in the car. But of course, there's some Eighth Doctor news this week as we chat, because Big Finish have just released the latest Eighth Doctor box set.
Ooh, yes they have, and I'm very excited to listen to it.
It's called What Lies Inside? ? With Paradox of the Daleks, which is a two-part story by John Dorney, and The Dolby Spook, which is a one-part story, and it sounds very promising because it's been written by Lauren Mooney and Stuart Pringle, who are fantastic. We are so getting them on because The Dolby Spook is great, a great story, which we'll not go into too much just now, but Lauren and Stu are great fun, and we are so going to have them on very soon because they're great fun. And their husband and wife, they get married literally a few days before I first spoke to them back in May for Vortex, chatting about their story for Riversong, and it's very, very good.
That's so lovely.
Mm-hmm. It is. It is. And they are lovely. So, yes, it was good. Yes, that was my... There's adventures on the way to the cinema in Edinburgh, the View Cinema in Edinburgh, which I thought was brand new, but it's not. It's actually been open for ages, apparently. So, 20 years.
That, blimey, that's definitely not new.
Yeah, I don't go up that end of town often, or didn't go up that end of town often when I was in Edinburgh. So, it's new to me. Let's take it that way.
That's okay. New to you is fine.
Okay.
So let's hear the trailer produced by the distributors, Kaleidoscope.
I feel like I don't want to regard myself as a fan. I'd rather be the one who's worshipped.
Worshipped or blamed?
I think at the end of the day, probably both. I wrote The Eighth Doctor, played by Paul McGann.
It's a bit of a responsibility, I think, that we have. You know, stories are powerful. Mythologies are powerful.
My job was to write a TV movie pilot with the hope that it would spawn a new American Doctor Who series.
The American fans, they are the diehards.
There's a whole community of people that do this.
They love this thing that society says you shouldn't love as much as you do.
I didn't go to conventions for a very good reason.
Be nice.
I thought the fans would kill me.
The Doctor being half-human, please punch me in the face.
People universally went after the script.
I got physically assaulted by someone who was so angry at the idea that the Doctor would kiss.
No sex, please. He's Matthew Jacobs.
My father was an actor. He was in an early Doctor Who adventure called The Gunfighters.
It'd be fantastic on The Gunfighters, because you're going to go back to your boyhood memories.
I really don't want to do The Gunfighters panel. It's freaking me out. I was pouring myself into that character. I got so close. And then I got left behind.
Maybe I'm regenerating.
Doctor Who has helped a lot of people find who they are.
This is a giant family, and it's full of love. The sense of community and companionship.
That's what I enjoy the most about it.
You go for the fans.
You're a part of this now.
I think at the end of the day, I'm a bigger fan than I knew.
At some point or other in our lives, we all ask the same question. Who am I?
Oh dear, there we go. That's a little joke there that listeners, you won't have heard, but it's made Becca laugh because it was very rude. And anyway, hearing that trailer again makes me just want to see the whole film once more. But hey, not long till the Blu-ray's out and it'll be coming through my door very, very soon.
I am very excited about getting to watch it.
You will be. You'll love it.
I'm so sorry.
That's all right. It's early in the morning as we record today, so... And
you've it been, is.
Yeah. And you, yes.
I haven't been sleeping very well, no.
No, but that's all right. It's allowed. You're sleeping better than you used to, though. That's good.
Very much so. But, not great at the moment.
No.
So, I want to hear all about your journey and the thoughts, so I think you should play that funky audio, Kenny.
Good show, Becca Boo. Let's go. Right now, it is 6:21 p.m. It's Thursday, the 27th of October, 2022, and you join me on my way to Edinburgh, and I'm not alone. Who's with me?
Hello. My name's David Steele, co-host of the Earth 2 podcast, occasional contributor to the Power of Three, making my first proper full in the flesh appearance on the Exalted Pieces of Eighth. It's great to be here. Yes, I'm accompanying Kenny because we're going through to Edinburgh, and we're going through to Edinburgh for a reason.
We are. We're going through to see Doctor Who Am I getting its cinematic release at the View Cinema in Edinburgh at the Omni Centre, which recently opened. And I've never been there before.
So. Me neither. It's very exciting. So Doctor Who Am I, of course, is the documentary about Matthew Jacobs, who wrote the Doctor Who TV movie from 1996. If you're a regular listener to Pieces of Eight, you'll have heard Kenny and Rebecca's previous episode where they talked to Matthew about the movie. So we're on our way to check it out. Very exciting.
Indeed. And produced by Vanessa Yule, of course, who we also had on the podcast quite recently. And... you might be able to hear in the background, we've actually got the TV movie soundtrack on because that's the kind of sad person I am. But it adds to the mood.
So gets us in the zone, doesn't it?
It does, very much in the zone. Hi. Now, I have to say, this is quite an interesting one for me, Dave, because when I first saw the TV movie, I came through to Edinburgh to buy it at HMV in Trinity Street.
Of course.
And queued up for the midnight opening and got it. And I've realised that I cannot find the little badge that I got. It's the Doctor Who TV movie logo. I had it as a lapel badge, and I used to wear it to work. But I cannot find the badge, and I thought I had it, so it might still be in an old jacket pocket. That's strange.
I think I've got it. Was that an HMV exclusive?
It was.
Right. Because I'm sure I've got one of those. I can't remember when I bought mine. I certainly didn't queue up for a midnight opening.
Not a true fan.
Well, it wasn't practical.
Not a true fan.
Who was going to drive? I didn't drive. Who was going to get me back from Glasgow? 1 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday night or whenever it was.
It was Wednesday, I recall, and it was a lovely warm evening. And myself and Mark Doherty went through, and we stayed at Cameron Robertson's student flat. And but then the other thing that we did was came back through myself, Mark and Alistair McGowan, and we came through for the TV screening, which was actually 26 years and 5 months ago to the day, 27th of May 1996. So it's quite interesting, you know, doing this road. That's what that was in my Nissan Micra, and since then I've had my Suzuki Vitara, my red Peugeot, my blue Peugeot, and my red other smaller Peugeot, and now my Ford Ka. So that's a good 6 cars ago.
Interesting.
But there we go.
That's a very specific anniversary though, 26 years and 5 months. I remember the, I'm sure I talked about this on...
That's funny, sorry, just going to interrupt. You're 26 years and 5 months. That is actually your beryllium anniversary.
Is it?
No,
you're
just made it up.
For God's sake. No, I probably talked about this when we talked about the TV movie on Power of Three. But I remember going to see Sleeper at the Barrowlands on, I think, the Sunday night, and then Ash on the Tuesday night, or maybe it was the other way around, and the TV movie was on the Monday. So it was all very exciting, three very exciting days. Bit like last week when I went to see Mark Owen and Michael Palin just before the Power of the Doctor was on. Anyway, I was working at Abbey National when the TV movie was on, and since then I've worked for Clyde Action, HMV for 20 years, and now I've worked for MCF Tour Support for the last 4 years, so that's quite... 4.5 years nearly. Cool. Gosh, yes. So that's all a lot of irrelevant nonsense, but yeah, we're on our way to see the movie. So yep.
Are your expectations, Dave?
Well, I'm not sure, to be honest. I like Matthew Jacobs. I think he's come over very well when he was on Who's Round, when he was on your podcast. He was obviously interviewed for the DVD bonus features when they did the special edition. What I've found really interesting over the years, and Toby Haydock's Who's Round, excellent Who's Round podcast typified this, I've become much more interested in the sort of the social history and the people involved in making Doctor Who, much more than just accumulating facts about the production of the TV show. So I kind of want to see what Matthew has to say, and I know that he's interviewed a few people who, some of whom have been in the podcast, people involved with the movie, and I kind of want to see what they've got to say about it after this length of time. And it'll be interesting to see because this is one thing that I was thinking about actually listening to your episode, your recent episode, was how much the fandom, the active fandom, has evolved since the movie came out. How much the fandom has changed since our day of being young men in our 20s and being into it. Yep. In our day, it was a lot more about writing and discussion, whereas it's a much more involved and I think demonstrative sort of celebration that a lot of fans do nowadays, you know, the cosplay sort of thing. There's a lot more fan production and fan art. I think it's definitely evolved, so I kind of want to see how... It's a long time since I've been to a Doctor Who convention, so I want to kind of see what the convention material is like, to see, you know, how the fandom is treated in the documentary now it comes along. What are your expectations, Kenny?
Well, I'm quite interested, particularly given that it's the fact that Matthew felt that American fandom had sort of got this bad idea. Right. And obviously American fandom is quite different to British fandom from what I can gather in the 21st century. There's an awful lot... Yes, there's an awful lot more of what we would have called dressing up in the olden days.
Yes.
Or to give it its term now, cosplay. And that's... There's an awful lot more of that, having seen that at Big Finish days. And there is some amazing stuff, particularly when you've seen Narvin. I've never seen anyone do a Vord, actually. If anybody wants to do the Vord that's on the cover of the Big Finish story, Beachhead, I would love to see that. Please, get in touch. I'll send you my personal email.
Don't get in touch with him, he's a bad man.
What are my expectations? I'm expecting to see... I think from what Matthew said, from somebody who's... He starts off quite grumpy from what he told us previously,
yeah,
and then sort of embraces it and realises that he is part of the family, and I suppose we've all got a lovable grumpy uncle somewhere, or have had, and maybe that's what, you know, almost a bit curmudgeonly, a Victor Meldrew sort, perhaps. Is that the phrase? Because the thing is, when I've spoken with Matthew, he's always been wonderful and kind and friendly and very warm and funny and great company. So I'm intrigued to see how this comes across, particularly, as you said, we've got some celebrity guests who are going to pop up in it, and and I think it's a duration of about 82 minutes, something like that. So I'm quite keen just to see what goes in, and it's going to be fun.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that sort of surprised me listening to your chats with Matthew was how kind of had this sense that he wasn't thought well of or wasn't welcome. And I don't think anyone would lay any problem, especially maybe this is the difference, as you say, between the British and American fans. I don't think any British fans would lay any perceived faults with the TV movie solely at the feet of Matthew Jacobs.
No.
I mean, this was a case of too many cooks, as he himself says, I'm sure at one point. So many people with their hands in, trying to please so many masters, trying, you know, if you pardon the pun, trying to appease so many interested parties. You know, it was a messy production. It was a messy script. You know, it was a difficult production where they had to satisfy the BBC bosses, the channel bosses, the production company bosses, with Matthew in the middle of it. So, if anything, he should be getting, in my opinion, should be given the credit for creating something that is just about coherent. You know, but it'll be very interesting to see it. I mean, as I say, some of the best DVD and Blu-ray features recently have been some of Toby Haydock's features, like the one on Peter R. Newman, it's the one where he visited John Levine, the one where he visited Matthew Waterhouse, and I think there's one on David Whittaker on the Series 2 box set that we're going to get quite soon. So I'm kind of treating it like that. I'm treating this as, in a way, going to see a Blu-ray bonus feature on the big screen.
That's a great description. I like that. You know, that's very much it. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to getting there. Obviously, we have no expectations how many people are going to be there, but it'll be interesting to see just how many people are going along, because, say, there was a big queue for the TV movie when it was released in Edinburgh, and a lot of people came along to the pub in Edinburgh to watch it, people who we didn't know. When I say the collective we, as in the Edinburgh Doctor Who group, when I was a very active member, and it'll be good to see what people make of it and who turns up.
And how often do we, you know, you and I don't get the chance to visit the BFI in London whenever they have the screenings to tie in with the Blu-ray, so it's nice that we're getting the chance to see something Doctor Who related on the big screen.
And we're making this into a social trip as well.
Absolutely.
I think we will now fast forward to a little while later, and we will be chatting to you when we get to the cinema. Speak to you soon, people.
Dave's not going to be impressed, but we're sat in the cinema. He's shaking his head, and there's adverts on, and there's quite a few people here. I don't recognise anyone, although I've met Richard, who's sitting in the row in front of us, and we'll be hearing from him later. And we're getting all ready to go. Quite excited. Particularly as our tweets have been liked by Matty Jacobs, and Doctor Who Am I has also liked it. So sat here in my Paul McGann t-shirt from the TV movie costume. So we'll find it. Anyway, we'll be back. Laters! Well, everybody, that's us. We have left the cinema. Dave's just farted. And it was a good story. It was a very good one.
It's like a gunshot, honestly.
So we've left. We've just seen Doctor Who Am I. And I think we can both honestly say that was a fantastic film.
Yes. Very, very glad that we made the effort. It would have been so easy just to kind of let that pass by, but it was wonderful. Very, very affecting. I love Matthew Jacobs now. Do you know what I mean? What a nice guy. I mean, and it was really, really intimate, but not invasive, I felt. You know, he was really open, but, you know, it was objective at the same time. It was fascinating. Really, really, really good.
Yeah. I mean, I think that when we start off, Matthew's definitely, as we said on the trip through, curmudgeonly. And I love the fact that he was asked for an autograph and then he jokes about, shall I draw a penis on it? And just think, that is just so not what Doctor Who people do.
Just to clarify, that was someone asking Matthew to autograph the DWM with the message, with a headline, no sex please, he's British. It wasn't just randomly Matthew suggesting that he draw a male member on something. We should clarify that.
Yeah, context is everything. But I think that it's a really fascinating journey, and I think that some of the thing that really got to me, and you'll probably have found this as well, Dave, was when he starts talking about his parents and the fact that Matthew's mum sadly took her own life when he was just a very young boy.
Yeah.
And he's saying that his childhood was pretty much, in his own words, saying it was fucked up, as his dad was bipolar. And obviously the actor's life was an interesting one for him. And the fact his dad passed away before the TV movie was made, which told us in the previous episode. But just hearing him talk about that, and I think that's the thing Here we go, we've got a guy who's written a big Disney film, The Emperor's New Groove, and we found out its working title. We're not telling you what it is, go and buy this film when it comes out, find out for yourself.
Yeah.
And really, yeah, just the emotional contact, I think it's just that sort of, I mean, I wouldn't say that I know Matthew really well, but through the podcast we've chatted quite a bit and stayed in touch and always have a giggle when we do catch up. But I feel that I really, really got to know him a lot better now through this. I mean, obviously you've heard him in interviews, so how did you?
Yeah, I mean, as I said there, it was intimate, but still sort of objectively, he comes across really, really well, comes across as just a really decent human being, and it was very interesting watching his sort of gradual sort of shift as he, you know, went to his first convention, but then kind of got the sense of the community. That's, I mean, it's been a long time since I went to a convention. And, you know, it was obviously he was getting the idea of the buzz and that everyone that there was on the same page and chatting to Paul McGann and taking the lead from him and how he kind of helped him in. But it was really nice because it kind of held up a window, held up a mirror, I suppose. And, you know, there's a slight element of, you could really sort of tell that at first that Matthew was sort of thinking, what have I got myself into?
Yeah.
But by the end of it, he's very happy and he's embraced it. And it said a lot about, you know, how fans are often perceived by people who aren't fans. You know, I look at crowds of football supporters smashing up George Square in Glasgow, almost by rote, it seems, a couple of years ago, and I just don't get it. But then they don't understand why I've got the Superman badge tattooed on my arm, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? And it's, I think a lot of the points and a lot of the lessons the theories it was putting was that I think could be applied to all sorts of fandoms, whether you're a Ranger, a Celtic fan, or a Taylor Swift fan, or a Star Wars or a Star Trek fan. You know, the best thing about fandoms is meeting other people, having that shared interest and experiencing that sense of community.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, as we said, I think when we're talking the way through, has evolved quite a bit from when Kenny and I, you know, first knew each other in the 90s. It's very different now. But it was very heartwarming. It was really nice to see Matthew engaging. Very emotional at times when he's talking about his dad. There's a sequence when he's doing a sort of commentary panel for clips for the Gunfighters. You know, his dad appeared in that. And that's quite moving as well, because you can tell that he's openly very nervous about doing it, but then they go ahead and do it and he ends up really enjoying it. And I suppose, you know, that sort of was a sort of, you know, an echo of his fear about getting involved in the whole sort of thing. I mean, one thing I thought was really interesting, this is slightly on a tangent, was just a number of familiar Doctor Who faces who just sort of drifted through in the background.
Yes.
Like Mr. Briggs gets a couple of interview quotes, but you also see Andrew Cartmell and Dan Starkey and Mike Tucker.
Gary Russell.
Yeah, and a few other folk just sort of hovering in. So if you like spotting Doctor Who celebrities, listeners, that's another reason to go and see it. what was your sort of overall feel then, I mean, of it, Ken?
I mean, I think the guests were fascinating, just hearing how the likes of Paul McGann looks at it when he was at first saying, and that, no, I'm not one for these conventions and things like that. And then ultimately, obviously, he's become a regular and is absolutely loves it, of course, and he's very much in his element, because he always said, oh, I'm not a showman like McCoy,
yes,
and or Kent, as he would say. Then you get him, you know, to absolutely actively embracing it and loving it. And you know, in fact, we get a wee clip from with Eric Roberts at home as well.
Yeah,
we interviewed him and Eliza.
That was lovely.
And Eric Roberts completely mad, bonkers, in a good way. And we get a little insight into them at their home. And then we have the wonderful Daphne Ashbrook, who's stunning still and completely bonkers. And she's got so much presence and charisma in there. I think she's a real star of it. To even, we don't get enough Daphne Ashbrook, but that's just a very personal thing. But really, really interesting just seeing how, you know, the journey it goes on. And I think Matthew and Vanessa are great when they're having their banter. That I really like that, the fact that you've got friends and she's asking questions and Matthew's been quite almost like giving really grumpy responses,
yes,
which I like. I think that was fun, and it adds to the character of it as well. I mean, I'm assuming that this is the real Matthew and he's not just playing up to it.
No, I think it was definitely not quite warts and all, but definitely real, a real sort of sense of him. I mean, it was, as I keep saying now, it was very intimate. The only bit of it I felt a bit uncomfortable with was when he kind of went to meet a couple of fans who were maybe a little bit lacking in manners and social graces, and there's one guy who was still moaning about the kiss, still moaning about the half-human. I mean, it's been over a quarter of a century. Come on. Good grief. But I think there was some very... The conversation he had with Philip Seagal was very telling, and I think there's a lot of truth in that about, you know, certain people's attitudes to it. I mean, I remember being really annoyed. I still get annoyed at Hanky Panky and the TARDIS.
Thank you, John Nathan Turner.
But it was, you know, Philip Seagal and I think, and Matthew, I think they've got a real sort of psychological insight into how fandoms work and how the way the fan brain works and the proprietorial sort of sense. But, you know, there was a couple of guys that really didn't do themselves any favours.
I really like the bit when Matthew's basically saying, because these are the guys in the playground who never kissed a girl. I just thought, that is so funny, and just thought, and actually in many ways, looking back in fandom, think, yeah, that is,
well, I mean, my,
quite insightful.
My feeling on all that was, still to this day, sort of remains, you know, he's an alien. Why is he going to go around getting off with humans? Don't know. If you've got a lead that goes around capital R being romantic, then it's just, it kind of removes a slight, what made him kind of unique in the first place. So the whole point was that he didn't do that sort of stuff. So that just says quite a lot about me, probably. I'm so glad we made the effort to come through and see this. Really am. It was tremendous.
Yeah. Something that was really insightful for me was the look at American fandom, because I don't know if you saw back in the days of BSB, when they did these documentaries and they showed like Doctor Who's Who,
no, I don't remember,
and hosted by Eric Luskin, and it showed you that, and there was that woman there who was like, and this is what the Master would wear if he was a woman, and it was basically an Anthony Inlay outfit, you know, in velvet, but sure, with a skirt on it, and I just think, my God, this is mental.
Yeah.
And it was really interesting just to see how it's evolved, and the fact it's not pulled back, if anything, it's gone even further.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's certainly, as we said in the way over, on our way through, there's a lot, you see a lot more cosplay in Britain than you used to. It's definitely a thing with the younger fans, I think. I don't look down my nose at it, but I still sort of think, no, I don't get it. But, you know, if it makes people happy, go for it, and you see some great costumes. I remember when I was at Cabot Sci-Fi Con in Edinburgh a few years ago, and just some of the costumes I saw there were phenomenal. But it was a good indicator of the difference between, we're a bit more reserved over here.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say keyed up, but we certainly don't, I think, I have to be careful what I say because I don't want to upset anyone. I think Americans are maybe, in some cases, are maybe a little bit more comfortable with being demonstrative than we are here. I think that's maybe fair to say. And
yeah,
they're, I mean, there was moments when, especially in the costume parade sort of section, there was, do you know what, listeners, there was a really hot lady, Eighth Doctor, I tell you. Anyway, so it's worth seeing for that alone. I saw Ross and Ken. no, it's very interesting. I mean, it'd be interesting to see how he got on if he did another one where perhaps he came to a British convention and experienced sort of, you know, British fans. Because, you know, growing up, the fandom in Britain was always a little bit more, for want of a better word, academic. It wasn't so much about tearful confessions in front of an audience or, as we call it, dressing up. It was always quite, you know, quite bookish, and we'd like just the facts, please, you know, that sort of stuff. So it was interesting to think that how Matthew would get on if he'd been able to come over to Britain
and yep,
visit a few events over here. That would certainly be maybe something that he could do in the second one.
Yeah,
couldn't you, Matthew?
Yeah, and Matthew, remember to bring us along because we love you.
Yes.
Because we know you're listening, Matthew Jacobs. Yes, we're standing in Edinburgh, in Queen Street, recording this because we've literally just left the cinema. But something, yes, you're talking about there, Dave, about the American fandom and the costume parade, and I did notice the female lady doctor.
Let's give that as much emphasis as
yes,
we can.
Yes, we did like the lady eighth doctor.
No, what about the girl dressed up as Barbara and the two
that guys?
That
was great, the Monoptera.
Monoptera, that was phenomenal.
But the one that, I mean, this competition was won by a woman dressed up as Queen Elizabeth I of England, as the current queen, well, not the current queen, the one who's just died, was Queen Elizabeth I of Scotland. But anyway, that Queen Elizabeth, she was dressed up as her. She was doing some sort of, I may have the body of a mere weak and feeble woman type thing. And then she turned it into some sort of speech against Daleks and Cybermen, and I just didn't get it.
Yeah, I didn't get it.
I just don't know what that's all about.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's is it a talent show? Is it? I just don't know what, and I don't understand that aspect. But
yeah.
It was interesting to see, though.
Watching Matthew's reactions from the audience to all this sort of stuff going on. That was quite good. Because it is very much Matthew's going to convention, his first conventions, and it's his attitudes and how he finds his reactions to the fans, and he's very honest about it. And you know, and all credit to him for doing that, because he's not laughing at people, but you can see him having a genuine reaction. But gradually, obviously, warming to it, and it was nice that he was made so welcome and able to do that, I think.
Yep. Now let's talk about the bits at the end. When they're at the convention, Paul McGann's at it, and it's his birthday. And Matthew got caught up in the moment, and he recorded it on his cell phone or mobile, and got the video footage, and he watches it back later with Vanessa. And he really tears up and realises that he may not quite be a Doctor Who fan, but he's part of the community.
Yeah.
And he actually, and it's just sort of like he completely gets it, and the fact that you get drawn in emotionally, and the fact there are some bloody brilliant people in fandom.
Absolutely. I mean, and it is very emotional. I mean, I didn't quite tear up myself, but you know, I was on it, I was in it, I was in the vibe and feeling it. It's very, very good. As I said at the top, I'm so glad that we made the effort, because we're both obviously near the west coast of Scotland. It's not so far to travel in the grand cosmic scheme of things, but it's enough on a school night coming through to Edinburgh. It's a bit of a big deal.
It's a 50-mile drive.
Yeah, I mean, and it's a shame that it wasn't on in Glasgow, but I'm really glad that we did, because I feel better for it. It's, you know, it's kind of, I mean, I've said many times that over the last couple of years my active interest in Doctor Who has sort of declined for many reasons over the last decade or so. And it's kind of, it reminded me of very sort of happy times when it was a big deal. I mean, there's some commentary on how some people maybe see Doctor Who as a substitute for religion, and I kind of, you know, understand where they come from and that. But I think it's, for me growing up, it was often a distraction from loneliness. It was a way to just focus frustrations and energy. So I mean, I'm never going to mock someone for being a Doctor Who fan. As I said at the start of this little chat, you know, fandoms, be it for bands, be it for football teams, be it for TV shows, be it for movie franchises, you know, they're all cut from the same cloth. And I think a lot of the lessons from this can be applied to a lot of things. And it was very interesting, very emotional, and just very nice to just spend the time with Matthew. I wish I'd been in it, just so I could say to him, look mate, I quite like the TV movie, it's got some brilliant jokes and some really good lines. I would have liked it if there'd been a few more people that had the chance to say that to him, rather than giving a bit of time to a couple of people who remain nameless who were a bit snide about it, to his face.
Well, you know what, Matthew will be listening right now, so Dave, you've just said it to him. Is that right for you, Matthew?
That works, that'll do.
The other thing that really surprised me, pretty much from the word go, was the fact there were actual clips from Doctor Who off the telly on it.
Yeah.
I was not expecting that, because it's not a licensed BBC documentary.
Oh, right.
But lo and behold,
that's not going to get anyone in trouble.
No, there will have been low licenses. It did say at the end, I did check the credits, because we did stay to watch the credits at the very, very end.
Yeah, there is a post-credit sequence, listeners.
Don't tell them about what happens
next. I'm not going to say that. I'm just saying there is a post-credit, so if you do get a chance to see it, make sure you do stay to the end. And it's not, don't worry, it's not Nick Fury turning up to ask Matthew to join the Avengers or anything like that. It's still worth seeing.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it was a great documentary. I'm not going to give it a score, because that would be insulting.
No, I've never been one for that. I've never been one for giving marks out of 10. I've
just
read a couple of paragraphs about, you know, what I liked about it.
Also, Dave, talking of dates and stuff, you always list the films that you've been to see.
Yes.
Every year, so are you going to add this to the list?
Oh, absolutely. This will be quite high up the list, to be honest, because it was very good. I mean, it's very rare that we get a chance to see anything related to Doctor Who on the big screen, so even just a couple of snippets from proper TV Doctor Who that we got.
One of the weird things for me was actually seeing William Hartnell in the big screen, which obviously we'd had a brief clip of him in Day of the Doctor when I'd seen that in the cinema 9 years ago, but it was so weird seeing William Hartnell on the big screen and then clips from the TV movie, and just thinking, this is how they should have done it back in the day. We should have had the TV movie on the big screen.
Yeah. It'd be nice to see it in the cinema. I'm very fond of it, I like it. I mean, it's a bit messy plot-wise at times, but as I said on our way through, that's probably the danger of almost writing on the hoof, as they were doing at the time. But there's some great jokes. We all know the dress for occasion, the line, you know, give him the keys, which just, you know, makes me laugh still, and, you know... And it was immaculately cast. I don't think the TV movie gets enough credit for all the things it got right. It was disappointing to see that they gave so much time in this. And they didn't give a lot of time, but they gave a little bit of time to a few people that were actually complaining about complaining about certain aspects of it rather than just celebrating what was good about it.
Yeah.
That's what I, that's how I prefer to focus my energies these days.
Yeah. I mean, I find that I'd come out of there and I just want to, when I get home, I just want to whack the TV movie on and just give it another watch.
I want to watch The Gunfighters, to be honest, because I've not watched that for a long time since I did my last big watch through. So I probably haven't seen The Gunfighters since 2008, I think, at least, probably. Maybe I'll watch it when it comes out on the Season 3 Blu-ray.
Oh, good point. Whenever that may be. But big question is, Dave.
Yes, Kev.
The Blu-ray's
come. Ken, sorry. Yeah. Yes, Ken.
The Blu-ray and DVD are on the way. Will you be buying it for home media?
I don't know. I'm more inclined towards it than I would have done beforehand. I mean, that was one of the reasons why when the option of going to see it in the cinema, let's go for it, because I wasn't sure if I would buy it on DVD. I would recommend it for anyone that didn't get the chance to see it in the cinema. I would say it's definitely worth looking at. It's very, unreservedly, to be honest. I might buy it myself eventually, because now I haven't seen it in the cinema. I think it would be better for me to see it in the cinema, because I knew that I'd be less inclined to seek it out on DVD. But if anyone is thinking about it, I would recommend it.
Yep, I think that's a fair summing up. Dave, it's been a real joy. Thank you for your company.
Okay, it was a pleasure.
And joining us in this very different episode of Pieces of Eight.
It was a pleasure. I'll come back any time that I can be positive about something. No, it was lovely. It was, and Matthew, if you are listening, thank you very much for sharing that with us. It was very nice, and I feel very privileged to have had your insight into a lot of things, not just Doctor Who, but other stuff too. So thank you, fella. God bless you.
But yes, also give credit to Vanessa, because for somebody who's making her first film, it turned out brilliantly. Great shots, great interviews, and it looked beautiful. And to cut down, 90 hours of footage down to around 90-odd minutes, it's no mean feat. And the fact that it told a good story.
Yeah, as I keep saying, objective and but intimate, it was wonderful. Yeah, well done, Matthew, well done, Vanessa.
Back to you in the studio, Becca.
Okay, that was really weird, but I loved it. That was great.
I pre-recorded that and thought it would be funny because it made me laugh. You have to excuse all the background noise and the legs, because there were quite a lot of people about for a Thursday night in Edinburgh, with cars and buses as well in the background. But I think it managed to filter out the worst of it, so you can hear what we were saying and her thoughts on it. But yeah, we had fun.
Exactly. And you were recording out and about. You can't not to expect background noise.
Exactly. It's being live on location. I think that it's not often we write out on location with Pieces of Eight. So yeah, we'll take that as a report. We'll call it a live news report or something.
A not so live news report.
Okay, good point. Well, it's recorded as live, but slightly edited, if that makes sense.
Yes.
Okay, that does. Okay, we'll qualify it then. But Dave and I weren't the only ones who've seen the film recently. And we recently put out a poll on Twitter. And we'd like to thank everyone who sent in some audio clips. And here's what the others all thought.
Hello, I'm Richard Lloyd. I'm a Doctor Who YouTuber and fan. Probably one of the younger contributors to this particular episode of Pieces of Eighth, because I only got into it with the new series, basically. First watched the TV movie around about the time of the 50th anniversary. And so I was very intrigued by this documentary when it was announced, because it wasn't something I was particularly expecting or knew was in the works for how many years it has been in the works. And then I kind of went to the screening, the same one as Kenny, actually, the other week. And watched it, and it was really great to see it on the big screen. So yeah, in terms of my overall thoughts on the documentary, I think it was really interesting to see a kind of independent type thing, and not like the BBC documentaries or stuff we get. It had a very, very different feel to it, and obviously an American documentary about an American Doctor Who story as well. It's quite fitting from that point of view, and very much focusing on the American fandom, and asking lots of questions about, why we are fans of Doctor Who, and kind of Matthew Jacobs is there kind of posing those questions. I think in the end it kind of comes back down to the idea of like escapism and this kind of family as well, and community, which is kind of mentioned in the film. But yeah, that sort of nostalgia and escapism and stuff, which Matthew kind of relates to on his own level personally because of his father being in the Gunfighters. That's very much what I got from it. It was really interesting to learn more, about the American fandom and stuff as a UK fan, and to learn more about Matthew Jacobs himself as well, who isn't someone I particularly knew much about myself. So yeah, a very interesting watch. It was really great fun. Just a really, really nice way to spend an hour and a half.
Hey, Kenny and the Pieces of Eighth podcast crew, this is Joshua Pruitt, TV writer and author of the big Finnish audio adventure Tides of the Moon from Doctor Who Waterworlds with the Sixth Doctor, available now at bigfinish.com. I'm calling to chat a little bit about an amazing documentary that I saw, had the privilege of seeing the West Coast premiere of Doctor Who Am I? I went primarily just thinking I was going to be getting a bit of novelty and entertainment, you know, as a Doctor Who fan, looking at Doctor Who conventions. And instead, I got something that was surprisingly moving. I think I thought I had an idea about the tone and where the documentary was headed, but less than midway through, it really regenerated into something that I found hugely warm and vulnerable. And it revealed a film with not just one beating heart, but two. The hearts of its directors, Vanessa and Matthew Jacobs. I was particularly affected by the movie because I have such strong memories of sitting down and watching the Eighth Doctor's first appearance on television here in the States. I was in Las Vegas visiting relatives, had to sneak into a back bedroom on a very small TV, get a little chair, sit up close, and it would have been the first time I'd ever seen a Doctor regenerate. And so the Eighth Doctor has always been significant for me in my journey as a Doctor Who fan, and most recently even as a very new Doctor Who writer. This documentary is absolutely phenomenal, a real love letter to anyone who's ever been a Doctor Who fan and was unsure about maybe their passion for this now 60-year-old institution. And it's a film really about love and our love for the Doctor. And that is a gift in any form. It is extraordinary to me that Matthew Jacobs, in tandem with collaborators in the 90s, gave us The Eighth Doctor, and now years later, working with Vanessa Ewell and their team, have given us another gift with Doctor Who Am I.
Hi, my name's Richie Morgan. I'm a filmmaker from Edinburgh, and I sometimes do a podcast called I Hate Doctor Who. For me, fandom documentaries can go either way. There's a lot of great fandom documentaries, obviously the king being Trekkies, but quite often I find them to be shallow looks at cosplayers kind of wandering around convention halls, peppered with interviews with people from the show, the usual chat about how wonderful the fans of the show are. I think as a fan, they're usually not that interesting. I think Doctor Who Am I strays into those cliches a couple of times, but what I did really enjoy is that it managed to tap into seeing fandom from the side of a creator from within the show. I thought it was mental that I was heading to the cinema in 2022 to watch a documentary about Matthew Jacobs, but I think his journey from convention cynic to sobbing believer gives us a lovely, interesting journey for any audience, even for those who don't like Doctor Who. Also, as a Doctor Who fan, it's interesting to see how American fandom compares. I think the Doctor Who fandom I experience is unique to other shows because of its close proximity and its homegrown feel. But also, American fans make good documentary fodder because they're just a little bit extra. It took me by surprise how much I enjoyed it. Also, justice for Andrew Cartmell. They did him a hellish dirty in that edit.
Hello, my name is Brian Wiega, and I live in Southern California, which is how I was able to attend the U.S. premiere of Doctor Who Am I at the Newport Beach Film Festival a couple weeks ago, October 14th. I've actually been in the orbit of this film for a while. I helped restore the McGann TARDIS console for Paul Salamoff, and he's a friend of Matthew Jacobs, so Matthew's become a friend as well. For the early bits that I saw when they were filming the documentary, Matthew and Vanessa Ewell were filming a lot of Doctor Who fans with the kind of house style for fan documentaries. We've seen like Trekkies or Ghost Heads, where there were a lot of fans, you know, myself included, and hopping in front of the camera to tell a bit about their passion and the mechanics of their fandom to sort of an outsider looking in. But the documentary kind of morphed into something else entirely. And I've actually never been happier not to appear in the film, because the final story Matthew and Vanessa to tell is just so much more compelling. The finished result sort of pushes the mechanics aside to tell Matthew's deeply personal story about loss of family and loss of community and redemption that uses Doctor Who fandom as sort of an envelope to fold over all these stories. You can actually see Matthew change over the course of filming as he moves from an outsider looking in to try and uncover a spectacle to a member of a family. It's delightful and frustrating and heartbreaking and funny and joyful and pensive and all the other adjectives. It's just a lovely piece of work. I never thought I'd cry at a documentary about Doctor Who.
Hi, I'm Sam, also known as UDWF1, originally from Wales, but I saw Doctor Who Am I in my new home of Shepherd's Bush in London. So, Doctor Who Am I, probably the most bizarre cinema experience I've ever had. We got into the room, it was this tiny screen in the back of the cinema, it was completely separated from everything else, it looked like it was sort of an area lost in time almost. There were about 15 people in the room, we were the youngest by far, probably by about twice our age. We sat down and watched the film, and I was kind of going into it knowing this is not about an area of the fandom I have any experience of, but I'm just kind of interested to see the perspective of it. And it was really quite eye-opening. I started to relate a lot of what I was seeing to my own life, and I sort of ended up thinking about things I'd never even really admitted to myself. And it all comes back to Doctor Who, this thing that's existed in my life from the very beginning. It's such a profound piece of cinema that, you know, spoke to me and spoke to something in my life that I never even really considered to be such a monumental piece of it. And, you know, to see that on film was really incredible. So, yeah, go watch it.
Hi, I'm Res Gell. I've been invited on the Pieces of Eighth podcast to talk about Doctor Who Am I, the documentary. I was super lucky to get to watch this in a theatre with Hoovers, which is the Derby Doctor Who fan club, which was a really cool experience getting to watch this documentary on a big screen like that. I'm obviously super grateful for them organising that, and it was really, really interesting. As somebody who is in a lot of different fandoms, I actually found the film very interesting as a deep dive, I guess, a thought piece on fandom and fandom culture generally. I feel like a lot of the commentary could be applied to lots of different things, not just Doctor Who and its fans, even though obviously Doctor Who fans will get so much more from this than other people. I think getting to watch it with other fans as well was quite fun because you could all have audience reactions together. So if you're able to watch it that way, I would 100% recommend it. I didn't expect going in that I would cry at the end of this, but I did quite a lot. And I definitely came away knowing more about the 96 movie than I ever did before. 96 movie has always had a very special place in my heart because it is as old as I am. I've always thought that it was beautifully campy and a love letter to classic Doctor Who. And it was really interesting to hear viewpoints from all over the fandom who have wildly different interpretations of the film. And I guess forcing myself to ask what my interpretations of the film are and how it's shaped my involvement with the fandom and how I value and view the movie. So yeah, I laughed a lot, I cried a lot, it definitely made me think about it for a long time afterwards. And you know, they're right in that Hollywood is a ageist concept, and I do think that we have a lot more fun when we can just free reign and make the stuff that we actually love, which is one of the main things I took away from it.
Hi, my name is Sebastian Astley. I'm a freelance entertainment and culture journalist for a number of places, including Radio Times. And we're, of course, here today to talk about the documentary Doctor Who Am I, which, if you haven't heard of, I'll give you a quick rundown. It is the writer of the Doctor Who TV movie reflecting on his legacy and the legacy of the Eighth Doctor as a whole. And it's just an incredible piece of filmmaking. It's kind of like watching a real-life regeneration happen before your eyes. It's Matthew exploring the Doctor Who fandom, but equally the Doctor Who fandom exploring Matthew. Essentially, what it comes down to is it's a very serious look at the Whovian fandom that takes everyone it meets very seriously and looks to answer the question of why each of us as Doctor Who fans enjoy the show and why we gravitate towards it. And eventually that becomes sort of an introspective look at Matthew's own complicated attachment to Doctor Who, both because his father was in it and because his sort of era, would you call it, has been in a limbo state for such a long time. And it's just a fantastic, if you're a fan of the Eighth Doctor, if you're a fan of Doctor Who as a whole, this is, you must watch this documentary. It's fantastic. Even if you're just a fan of anything in general, it does this amazing thing of being about such a specific story and yet translates on such a universal level that Matthew's journey will resonate with absolutely anyone who watches it. It's an absolutely darling documentary. It's unflinchingly vulnerable. That's in no small part thanks to Matthew being so open with everyone. Absolutely must watch documentary this year.
Did we get Tinny Peters?
No, she's not seen it yet.
Oh,
that's a shame, because I love listening to her. But we'll have more of Tina very, very soon. But we'll find out more about that later, because we're recording episode 5.1 next, and the listeners will probably know what that is. Yeah, but we're planning so far ahead, we want to be able to enjoy the festive season and get everything done well in advance. So there we go.
Yes. When is the episode that we're currently recording right this second being aired? Is that tomorrow?
That's tomorrow, yeah, as we speak. We're speaking on Thursday, and it's going to drop on Friday. Ooh.
Nice. Exciting times.
It is.
Anyway, thanks to everyone who sent in their thoughts on the film. It sounds so good, and again, I am really looking forward to seeing it. Remember, if you've enjoyed this week's Pieces of Eight, or indeed liked any episode that we've done, please do leave a review for us on iTunes or wherever you find your podcasts, as it means more people can find our episodes, and it's always appreciated. We'll be back next time with a look at the end of the beginning, the final story in the Big Finish Monthly Adventures range, which not only features the Eighth Doctor, but the Fifth, Sixth, and very briefly the Seventh.
And of course, the Seventh Doctor is Scottish!
For God's sake.
I know. We've not had him on yet, but we should, given that he's featured in the TV movie and handed over to McGann, we should ask him about that. I should email McCoy, but there we go. Anyway, it will be time for the end of the beginning, not the beginning of the end. And that said, we are closer to the end of this season than the start. And now I'm getting all confused. It's getting all wibbly wobbly, timey wimey. That's what I get for talking about episode 5.1 when we've not even recorded 4.13.
What are you doing, Kenny?
I really don't know. I'm not as crazy as I was a couple of weeks ago. Do you know what it is? I've still got Tuvalu in my system, or Tove Lo, if you want to read her name as it's written, but Tuvalu, that wonderful Swedish singer who I always go on about on Twitter. And yes, I've somehow managed to stay high. Oh, God, I'm manic. Anyway, go listen to Tuvalu, everybody, especially No One Dies From Love, because that's just a brilliant song. But hopefully nobody ever would, because that would be a horrible way to go.
Can you imagine?
Yeah. Oh, and the video's great, and it's got a Cyberman sort of, or Cyberwoman type person in it. So yeah, go and watch the Doctor Who fans. You'll love it. Anyway,
Please carry on.
No, I think I really should go and have a lie down, because until next time, I've been Kenny Smith.
And I was Rebecca Chapman.
Bye-bye.
Bye. My God.